Our first story is about a lake and how one tiny creature has changed the face of an entire community.
Picture a lake 1 mile around, sandwiched between a university campus and golden foothills. This is Lake Lagunita. Sounds like an ideal place to take out a boat, learn how to windsurf, or, when no one's looking, go skinny dipping.
These were the things we expected to find when we came to Stanford. Instead, we noticed something peculiar. Lake Log is empty. Close to it, anyway.
We heard about an endangered creature living here, and it's the reason why our lake is empty. It's a Loch Ness monster, if you will. We want to know, what do we owe this creature, and what have we sacrificed for it?
We're hunting for answers.
Okay, I've actually talked to my dad about this yesterday, who's a Stanford alum, had great memories about Lake Lagunita. He said there were lifeguards there, people were swimming, people were sailing. It was like one of the like centers of the campus. They had a big rally there before a big game.
When I applied here, like one of the hugest things that I was like, oh, I'm coming, was the picture of Lake Lagunita right there next to all the dorms. So I was thinking, shoot, man, you know, sunny California, pretty smart kids, a lake to go, you know, play on, fun.
Well, as long as I've been at Stanford, Lake Log has pretty much always been an empty mud pit. In my impression, it seems like the entire space is mostly wasted.
I was pretty bummed when I found out there was no lake. I think they need to color the thing not blue on the map, make it brown.
I don't know if I'd swim in it, because that's disgusting. But I definitely would like to windsurf or sail on it, or even just take a raft out and maybe drink a few beers.
And it's kind of a shame it's not filled up. I've heard something about the salamanders, some weird thing.
Yes, I have heard about a salamander at Lake Log.
Just one?
I mean, multiple salamanders. A salamander problem at Lake Log, although I don't believe it.
The lake isn't full because we don't have enough rain and because there's endangered salamanders that Stanford cares more about than students' happiness.
I'd want the bonfire back because I think that was a great tradition. That and it's silly that stupid salamanders are stopping us from having it.
I want Lake Lagunita back.
Bring back Lake Lagunita! You can't always get what you want.
You can't always get what you want. The sentiment runs so deep that last year, one student went so far as to organize a petition to fill the lake. 350 students signed.
We want the lake too, but the salamander stands in our way. It's an elusive obstacle. No one we know has ever seen it. So we're going on a salamander hunt.
The adults are upwards of 6 to 9 inches total length. A dark bluey black is their base coloration, somewhere a little brown once in a while, with a random array of little smallish, kind of pea-sized, yellow, golden splotches.
Back at Mallard Duck, 12 o'clock. Let's go.
Let's go!
Oh! I'm not going to make it, Becca. I just lost a shoe.
He's gone. He's off.
We need your help!
Back in the 1880s, the railroad tycoon, Governor Leland Stanford, founder of Stanford University, scraped out a corner of his 8,000-acre farm to form Lake Lagunita to irrigate his alfalfa field.
Even in its early years, Lake Lagunita functioned more like a sieve than an irrigation pond. It just wouldn't stay full. Stanford purchased 2,000 sheep to stamp out a layer of clay on the lake floor, but the lake still wouldn't fill. In classic robber baron fashion, Stanford bought out the competition,
his neighbors,
and demolished the interfering dams on their property. But nothing, Not even questionable business practices could keep the lake full year-round.
Within a few years of the university's founding in 1891, the lake became something that the governor probably never imagined, and certainly hadn't intended. A few good rains filled the basin, and it wasn't long before students started hopping the fence and built Lagunitas' first boathouse.
Over the years, Lake Log, as it is affectionately known to students, became home to big game bonfires, skinny dipping, windsurfing, and lazy afternoons.
You know, that's what you did. You got sat in the sun, you got burned, you got hot, you dove in the water, you swam to the pontoon, you saw who was there, and, you know, wished you knew some of the people who were there, let's say, and then you swim back and then pretend to be reading your books.
That's my dad, Larry Leifer, class of 62, 63, and 69. I heard this story growing up, and I vividly remember wanting a carbon copy for myself. When I came to Stanford, instead of finding the lake, I found this.
Okay, this looks promising. Okay, there's little things swimming around in here. Let's get right down to it. There's little, not microscopic, they kind of look like miniature lentils.
It actually closely resembles leftover soup.
So why is this? Why did my dad have this lake and I get leftovers? Like our friends, we have a suspicion that it's the salamander's fault. If a threatened species didn't live in Lake Log, would the lake be full? Would we have our skinny dipping, bonfires, and windsurfing?
We decide to go to an expert. Dr. Alan Launer works with the Center for Conservation Biology at Stanford. He's the salamander expert on campus. We ask him, what claim does the salamander have to Lake Lagunita?
You gotta remember, Stanford was, the first faculty was really heavy on zoologists. David Starr Jordan was a fish guy. Fish guys always poked around water. I almost guarantee you he found salamanders here. There's no way he didn't find them here. So we've had people poking around looking for salamanders since the beginning of the university.
If the salamander predates the university, then perhaps it has equal or greater claim. But Lake Log was never intended to be a wildlife refuge. And as long as it remains one, the salamander stands in the way of all our traditions.
So at this point... what do you think, Becca? Becca's being left behind. I didn't come this far to not find a salamander. Okay, it's deep now. It is up to my shins. I mean, I guess deep is a relative term. I just saw something move, but it turned out to be a twig. From here I can see, I don't know, at least 15, 20 joggers. Seems to be the one purpose of the lake now. Something to circumnavigate. Unfortunately, the salamander, or the lack thereof, is the only thing, aside from the mallard ducks, who are benefiting from Lake Lagunita.
Okay, well, this doesn't sit well with us. That the salamander has a claim to Lake Log is one thing, but should it have exclusive rights?
That's a hard one. That's a hard one to argue. I mean, that they have a kind of a right to exist. That usually only comes up when somebody asks, what's the purpose of the role? What good is the salamander? Which the usual response is, well, what good are you? You know, and that kind of puts it in an ethical perspective. They don't usually like it. That usually ends that discussion quickly.
Dr. Holmes Rolston III is an esteemed bioethicist at Colorado State University. We spoke with him during his visiting professorship at Yale.
Destroying endangered species is like tearing pages out of a book that we hardly know how to read.
This is the go-to argument for environmentalists dealing with skeptics, that we can never fully appreciate what benefits a species might bring to humanity. Therefore, it is impossible to comprehend what we would lose by eradicating that species.
It's been said that the remedies to all man's ailments can be found in the rainforest. Burn it down, and we may destroy the cure for cancer along with it.
On ethical grounds, we can't justify ignoring our duties to the salamander. Even though Lake Lagunita is a man-made lake, hardly a rainforest, who knows what the little amphibian living there could do for us in the future. Perhaps it's even doing something for us now.
I mean, I don't know how many kids we've had do honors projects and independent research on salamanders, but, you know, that's a valuable, very valuable resource for the university, is to have that right there for kids to roll out. Costs them nothing, and they can do it. They don't have to fly to Costa Rica, although that's fun.
So why the bad rap? Students perceive the salamander as the sole perpetrator in the disappearance of our traditions. Even now, we still can't help but wonder, what happened to the skinny dipping? What happened to the bonfire?
It had a whole bunch of strikes against it. The last one, which was the one that got the big press, was a salamander. I've never seen the university act so fast on a conservation issue before in my life, and never have since. It's like, oh yeah, we've got to save the salamanders, cut the bonfire out. The salamanders took the heat on the bonfire, no pun intended. They contributed to it, but it wasn't really the main factor.
Whether or not there's any merit to the accusations, the salamander is taking the blame for the loss of traditions. Does our duty to the salamander outweigh what we lose? Dr. Rolston thinks it does.
Anything I can imagine you might be giving up on this local lake, yes, your duty to the salamander would outweigh any pleasure that I can imagine that you might enjoy there.
But what if you don't subscribe to this sense of duty? Dr. Launer has something to say to that.
The only reason the thing has water in it is because of salamanders. The reason it's not filled to the brim anymore on any regular basis, two reasons. The dam, and I don't want to panic people, but it's not the most sturdy thing.
Wait a second, the salamander has nothing to do with it?
It turns out there are a few reasons why the lake isn't full. For one, the dam can't be trusted to withstand all 118 million gallons of water that Lake Log can hold. That, and the simple fact that it never rains enough.
But back when my dad went to Stanford, the dam was just as shoddy and it rained just as little. So what gives? The university is no longer allowed to divert enough water from the local creek to supplement rainfall. It's no longer allowed because the salamander isn't the only local species that's been listed as threatened. The steelhead trout, resident of said creek, holds claims to that water. What little water reaches Lake Log during a dry spell comes at the trout's expense and for the sake of the salamander.
Now we have to look at the situation a little differently. What would our world look like if it weren't for the salamander? Without him, the lake bed would be completely dry, or worse, the foundation of Stanford's next engineering quad. To eager developers, Lake Lagunita is the ultimate building site.
Large numbers of salamanders get squished on Union Pacific Boulevard when it's migration season. In the late 90s, the last time we had some really good migrations, you get those when the weather is just perfect and it all comes at once. We would have 300 squished ones out there and another 300 live ones we saw. And, it's just pretty big carnage.
After all this, the salamander turns out to be on our side. A spring of potential academic discoveries, as well as the guardian of our beloved open spaces.
Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paid paradise, put up a parking lot.
Outside the paradise of Lake Lagunita, a legal battle is raging. In 2005, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services determined that critical habitats, protected areas for the California tiger salamander, are no longer conducive or necessary for restoration. Fish and Wildlife released a final rule, cutting the salamander's protected habitat by nearly half.
Fortunately, this past summer, a federal judge in San Francisco overturned the Fish and Wildlife Service's brash move. It would seem that we have some friends in high places, and that for the salamander, at least, there is a light at the end of the tunnel.
When we started, we were asking, why are we sacrificing the lake for the salamander?
Now we want to know, what more can we sacrifice?
5 years ago, Stanford University constructed 3 tunnels of love under the local expressway at $20,000 apiece so that the salamanders could safely reach their mating spot, our very own Lake Lagunita.
So I say we go check out these tunnels of love. What do you say? And then I say we call it a day.
I say, let's go.
Why don't we do it in the road? Why don't we do it in the road?
Okay, we have,
we found the
tunnels
of love.
We found the tunnels of love.
They are nothing like what we thought they would be like. We've got, okay.
Okay, this is cool.
This is really cool. We did not expect to find them or that they would look like this.
Okay, so basically, we're on the non-Lake Lagunita side of Juniper Serra.
We're at the base of the foothills, right up against the edge of the highway.
You can hear what the salamanders are up against if it weren't for these tunnels. So take a moment to appreciate what these salamanders go through every mating cycle. They have to deal with traffic. Okay, so we are here.
Blocks. They look ventilated.
Actually, I read about this. There are sunroofs the entire way across the tunnel so that the salamander doesn't lose its way. It has to believe that there's another side. Otherwise, it won't even attempt to enter.
The tunnels of love, they're not perfect. They're kind of narrow and a little impractical. They're filled with prickly oak leaves that can't possibly feel good on a salamander's slithery stomach. But they do allow the salamander to come and go from the lake freely.
The more nearly the saving of it can allow it to continue as it evolved and on its own, the better I like it. And the less it's more like saving some wild fish in a goldfish bowl.
Oh my god. Trojan ultra-thin wrapper under the tunnel of love.
In the tunnel of love.
The salamanders practice safe sex. I guess that's the idea behind the tunnel of love.
No one will be watching us. Why don't we do it in the road?
Let's take a look through this tunnel. So... Yeah, I can see the other side quite clearly, actually.
There's a light at the end of the tunnel.
There is definitely a light at the end of the tunnel for the salamander. I don't know if I can make it through here. I'm not going to try. But there is a light at the end of the tunnel. I don't see a salamander, though. If we were ever going to find a salamander, it would be...
in the tunnel of love.
In the tunnel of love. Now imagine hearing that as a salamander.
We're going to play the sounds of the highway from inside the tunnel.
This is what the salamander hears.
We didn't get the lake back. We didn't bring back the bonfires, the skinny dipping, or the windsurfing. But we found out that the salamander needs Lagunita more than we ever wanted a watering hole.
You can't always get what you want. You can't always get what you want. But if you try sometime, it's just my fine. It's just my fine. You get what you need.
We thought the salamander was the reason why the lake is empty. Ironically, the salamander is the only reason the lake's not full of buildings, which makes us wonder, how many other cases are out there where an endangered species is the only thing standing between this and this?
Lake Lagunita, at 1 mile around, has one such case. we have a sneaking suspicion that an area of comparable size in the rainforest might have an infinite number.
You just might find.